Our reading this morning is a poem by Billy Collins called The Dead. The dead are always looking down on us, they say, while we are putting on our shoes or making a sandwich. They are looking down through the glass-bottom boats of heaven as they row themselves slowly through eternity. They watch the tops of our heads moving below on earth. And when we lie down in a field or on a couch, drugged perhaps by the hum of a warm afternoon, they think we're looking back at them, which makes them lift their oars and fall silent and wait, like parents, for us to close our eyes. When I was helping last year to serve a Unitarian Universalist church in Virginia, one of our congregants, Tom, told me a story about one of his coworkers. He said, "I got this coworker, and every weekend he drives down to Florida to visit his mom and comes back. Well, we were in Northern Virginia, so even just to make it to the border of Florida, that drive's going to take you 15 hours each direction." So after a few months, Tom discovers that his coworker is driving 15 hours each way every weekend to visit his mother's grave. That impressed Tom, since he only got to see his family on major holidays. But he was shocked, and he said, "Why on earth would you do that?" And his coworker explained that he had been raised in a small town in China, and there it was common practice to honor those who have died with prayer, offerings on a regular basis. And he explained that he knew his mother had not been ready to die. He could feel her grief and her unrest from leaving the world of the living too soon. So he drove every weekend for months to keep his mother's spirit company, to sit with her until she found peace. I would argue that many Americans would find this story beautiful but odd. Having a strong and active relationship with loved ones who have died is not part of our mainstream culture. All of us in this room probably have family traditions surrounding death. We may know the matriarchs and patriarchs in our family that we would turn to better understand what we do in times of loss. But then we go back to work, and we are expected culturally to return to life as usual fairly quickly. There is no requirement or tradition of wearing black for a month or cutting our hair or fasting. Other religious traditions provide specific instructions on how to grieve properly. Judaism, for example, instructs the faithful on what to wear, how to act, what prayers to say, how long to mourn, and when to return to life as usual. Many of us are Unitarian Universalist because we do not have to align our beliefs perfectly with a creed. There are not correct and incorrect ways of performing rituals. There are no absolute and unchanging statements about how we define God or salvation or what happens after death. The answer is no doubt different for each of you in this room, but I wonder if the nature of our faith is comforting or difficult for you in times of loss and grief. The original celebration of remembrance of the dead dates back 3,000 years to the Aztecs. The Aztecs celebrated the return of the dead to the land of the living with feasting and offerings to the gods. Hayes Lavis, curator of the National Museum of the American Indian, explains that the Aztecs did not allow mourning of the dead because they believed that tears would make their loved one's spirit's path treacherous and slippery. Today, in Latin American countries, there's still a sense of celebrating as well as mourning the return of loved ones. Children exchange candy skulls, and adults place delicious food on altars decorated with bright colors. The dead come home for a visit. The dead and the living can be back together again for a day. Through a combination of Buddhism, Taoism, and folk religion, people in China leave daily offerings for their dead ancestors and loved ones who have died more recently. It is believed that if the dead are not spoken to tenderly and shown honor and affection through gifts, their souls will become bitter and angry. The living have the ability and the duty to comfort and care for the dead. Folk religion in Madagascar emphasizes a belief that those who have died have power over the daily lives of those still here. People build tombs and bring offerings to their dead loved ones in hope that they will bring them good health and protect them from harm. There are few opportunities to contemplate our own death or to sit intentionally with the memory of our loved ones we have lost. As we have just heard, many cultures around the world incorporate those who have died into daily life. It is expected that those who have died will always be honored, remembered, and cared for by the living. Or it is known that the dead care for and influence our lives. These beliefs are a comfort to those of us still living, knowing that we would be honored, remembered, and cared for after death, knowing that we still have a say in the shaping of the world once we leave. We each have our own beliefs about what happens after death. Unitarian Universalism does not provide an answer. It might feel good to make our loved ones' favorite food and put it on an altar to call them home. It might soothe our grief to light a candle and know we are connected with the spirit world. For some of us, rituals like these are metaphors, and for some of us, they are very real. Regardless, we each need some way of connecting with the part of ourselves that misses our dead loved ones. We need some way of connecting. So how do Unitarian Universalists hold grief? If we cannot turn to an all-powerful God who has all the answers, if our faith does not tell us directly what happens after death, how do we mourn? How do we honor our loved ones? Well, in our Unitarian Universalist tradition, at memorial services, we open up the microphone, as we just did for Joys and Sorrows, and anyone present can come forward and tell a story about the person who has died. And this allows the human spirit to shine through at its best. When we are vulnerable to one another, and when we speak honestly about what we are experiencing, then the human spirit is at its best. Even if all we can do is cry in front of those who have gathered, we are telling the truth. We are showing that we trust our sacred community enough to share our pain so that we don't have to carry it alone. My mentor last year told me a story about a Unitarian Universalist memorial service she had led. The service was for a young girl who had died unexpectedly. And the girl's father did not give a eulogy, but when the microphone opened up for communal sharing, he stood up. And he explained that life did not make sense to him anymore. And he confessed that hope and solace were the last thing he could imagine feeling. The feeling of hope or trying to heal felt like a betrayal of his daughter. But then he said that he and his wife were grateful to the congregation for holding hope for them until they were ready to hold it for themselves. The Unitarian Universalist tradition is to put faith in the power of human community and the strength of the human spirit to overcome all. But what do we do when we're alone? We mostly do our grieving and our mourning privately. The emptiness that opens up in us when we lose someone cannot be filled in one sitting. We do not heal simply by attending a memorial service or paying our respects and then going about our daily lives. We may never heal completely, but rediscovering our resilience, our appetite, and our gratitude for life requires an ongoing effort. Those who leave a daily offering for their ancestors are on to something. They take a moment daily to think of and send love to the people they have lost. We can't prove or disprove that their loved ones hear them or feel that love. We cannot prove or disprove that our loved ones row glass-bottom boats through eternity and marvel at us from above, as Billy Collins suggested. But do you know what? Rituals of mourning do not make rational sense. This is an important lesson for us Unitarian Universalists. Our foremothers and our forefathers valued the use of reason. We often use our head first, and then our heart, soul, and body later, when we're trying to figure out what we believe or how we'll gather our strength for the week ahead. When it comes to grief, we have to use our hearts first. Death defies reason. You can explain how someone has died. There's a medical explanation, but it is much harder to answer the emotional and spiritual why. Much harder to find solace in the depth of our being. When someone we love dies, a part of us is torn away. The way life is supposed to be collapses, and it isn't enough to grieve only with our intellect in a time of loss or to try to explain away our feelings. When I was in high school, my dear friend Nick died. And first I mourned him in my Unitarian Universalist church. The youth group was given the honor of creating his memorial service. And I soaked up every story that was shared during the communal sharing. And I marveled at how many other people knew him and loved him. But that was not enough. I could not heal or let go in that one day. So over the years, I have found my own private grief rituals. The last movie I saw with Nick was Spider-Man, the one with Tobey Maguire. And since then, I bought a Spider-Man toothbrush holder, and I still have it. My husband has not thrown it away. And so twice a day, when I brush my teeth, I just glance Spider-Man out of the corner of my eye, and I think, Nick, I'm there with you. I'm thinking of you. I go to see every stinking comic book movie that comes out because Nick would talk about them for years before they were going to actually come out on screen. And I watch all of these because I feel connected with him when I do. And it's more than that. I feel like if I see the movies, he somehow can see those movies. We both always had number 6 as our lucky number, and I made up a rule in my head when he died that whenever I see the number 6, it means Nick is watching out for me. It means he's here. So sometimes I'll just accidentally pull up at the gas station and be at the 6th pump or the number 6, the line in the grocery store, and it always hits me. Maybe these little rituals bring comfort to Nick's soul, wherever he is. Maybe I'm only attempting to bring comfort to my own soul. I don't reason deeply about this. I don't work up arguments in my head so that I can explain to someone the logical details of why I believe and feel that Nick is still part of my life. It is not to be explained, it is to be felt. What ritual might you do that makes sense in your heart, if nowhere else? Maybe we do prepare our loved one's favorite food, and while it's steaming hot, they come home to their familiar smell. Maybe we listen to one of their favorite songs and pay homage to a simple, mundane moment we shared with them. Maybe we sit in silence with a candle when we're alone one afternoon and speak aloud to this beloved soul who perhaps hears us, perhaps does not. On this All Souls Day, let us remember that as Unitarian Universalists, we grieve collectively because we believe that the love of human community and the strength of the human spirit can overcome all. On this All Souls Day, let us remember that as Unitarian Universalists, we are free to grieve in ways that make sense only in our hearts. May we continue the work of healing as long as we live. Blessed be. Amen.